Wow. Did you catch that? He really tried to slip in that touch on the stomach. As if it's all the same. I would often pat them on the back, stroke them on the groin. Perhaps a friendly suck on the toe. But then they moved the line. So evidently, he touches police officers on the stomach, a tradition he started with his original chief of security, Larry Poppenfresh.
I want to run by some of the ways he says he greets people.
Ooh.
And I want you to tick. There were four he mentioned.
Okay.
I want you to tick if it's okay or if it crosses the line for you.
Okay.
Grip of the arm.
I don't like the word grip.
Yeah, grips are problematic.
That makes me nervous.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
Especially, I bruise easily, too. So a grip is going to give me a bruise.
Yeah.
And I don't want to remember that I met you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to say no to that.
Pat on the face.
I don't like the word pat either.
No. I don't like anybody touching my face.
You're very particular about your
face. Inside of the mouth is fine because that's the... I don't like the dry side,
mm-hmm.
but the wet part.
Yep. The only person allowed to pat my face is my plastic surgeon.
At the end to see if it's holding.
Good job. Sticks it together.
I think we're good. He's like, I'm going to give it a few pats, and then if it holds, you can go right out.
He's like, here we go. It won't fall off.
Slap on the back.
Well, I have a more positive connotation with that because that feels Irish to me.
Right.
But in this case, it's Italian.
Yeah. I think of everything we've gone through so far, slap on the back is the finest.
Although we've all had experiences where we've gotten the, like, angry slap on the back. From
right.
Somebody that's like, good job, buddy.
Passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Where
right.
you, yeah. So here's the one that he buried this one. This was the third
okay.
one he said because this was the
he
one
mumbled
that he
this
got. Well, he, this is the one that he was sort of, he was referring to this allegation. Touch of the belly. Touch
that's going to be a no for me.
That's
dog.
A no, yeah. And that was...
That's going to be a no for
a
me.
A no for me. And he
belly,
touched a woman's belly.
Okay,
yeah.
Bellies, any lady will tell you, a belly is... You don't... That's
yeah.
not... Unless you're very proud of your abs.
Right.
You
well,
don't...
I, as a man, I don't like my belly touched. And I've got like a 50-pack, you know... It looks like bubble wrap.
Well, it looks like a plastic bag filled with 50 beers.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But beer cans. Like a.
Beer cans, like that shape. Yeah, belly. You know, when you're a woman, when you're a pregnant woman, that is a big thing.
He maybe said stomach. I'm now realizing it.
Okay, because belly's very different than.
Yeah.
Okay, but stomach.
Touch, I mean, it's the same part, but he did say stomach.
Stomach.
Touch a stomach.
Yeah, it's going to be, again, like. There's a stomach is a very forbidden place. Like few people touch other people's stomachs.
Yeah.
Unless you're pregnant, and then everyone on the subway.
Right.
Touches you on the stomach.
You're right. You were New York pregnant.
I was New York pregnant, and people really come at you like, they really want to get it. They really want
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
In a fitting bit of karma, 14 days from now, New York will have its first female governor, current Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul. I did not realize how many Hochul fans there were out there. Hochul will be taking the seat vacated by Cuomo, hopefully after putting a towel down first.
life still goes on. I can't get used to living without, living without, living without you by my side.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Thanks this week for the songs from Husker Du, Funkadelic, The Beastie Boys, The Magnetic Fields, and Queen. And thanks for the clips and excerpts from Andrew Cuomo, J.L. Covan, Chuck Todd, Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, and Amy Poehler.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Written these books on music and animals. The first one was Why Birds Sing, about music and birds. And afterwards I said, next I want to do whales, because I knew that whale songs had been discovered in the 1950s and 60s, and that they influenced a lot of musicians, and that, you know, that could you actually go play live with whales? I hadn't heard too much about people doing that, so I figured I'm going to do that and write a book about it. So that was, I was researching that in 2006, and the book came out in 2008. So I would say since 2008, I've been trying to get National Geographic to do just this. Because National Geographic, as I described in my book in 1979, they published a sound page of a humpback whale song, which is like a record that you could pull out of a magazine and play on a turntable. That's called a sound page. And so National Geographic in 1979, which was maybe at the height of its influence, published in many, many languages. They all had this sound page. And they claim to have printed 10 million of these at once. Okay, interesting. Well, it turns out that's the largest single pressing of any album of music ever. And so then I told him, look, you did this in 1979. What are you going to do now? I didn't get much traction on this until out of the blue last fall, I just got a call saying, we want to do this. So that's how it happened. And basically what it is, for those of you who don't have in front of you, is the Humpback Whale Songs. It's a whale that sings a song that takes about 15, 20 minutes to sing, then it starts over again. It does it for up to 24 hours, just singing, 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 singing. And these humpback whales have a song that nobody knew about until the Navy was studying, the enemy, Russian submarines. They put hydrophones, underwater microphones, all across the oceans. And they wanted to hear secret stuff. And they heard a lot of secret stuff, but it turned out it was being made by marine mammals. As you could imagine, what's this coded communication? And they were a little disappointed to find out it was whales. But at least they said one thing. We can't let people find out about this. We have a secret now. It's a military secret, classified for like 10 or 15 years before we had these young scientists, Roger Payne and Scott McVeigh. They published this paper in Science magazine. All this is in my book, Thousand Mile Song from 2008. And they said in that Science paper, very interesting line, a humpback whale emits a series of surprisingly beautiful sounds. The scientist wrote that. And I called Scott McVeigh the other day. I called him up. He's 87 years old. I said, no one else has written, even to this day, something like that in a science paper. And he was pleased to hear it and pleased to see this geographic story, which all goes back to his analysis of this song. We had this issue like, how do we make it look musical but not quite musical in a human way? But National Geographic really had this interesting idea, I thought, for them. We're going to convince our readership this is music if we mix this graphic notation of yours with regular musical notation. And I said, oh yeah, has musical notation ever appeared in National Geographic? And they said, that's an interesting question, because I'm not sure it's ever appeared, which would be amazing. If you have musical notation in National Geographic, first time in history, for a whale song.
So it shows the musical notes, and then they're imposed with these colored, like, blobs, right, that represent the tones.
Technically, it's called pneumatic notation, which is a term from the first musical notation in Western culture looked like that, and it was done in churches in the medieval period to represent Gregorian chants. They're perfect for Tibetan overtone singing, as well as whales don't actually sing. They go, so it's not quite a steady tone. Uh-huh. And that you can say it's like, or you can represent its waviness. But I was very impressed that National Geographic said, we want the notation. We want the whale singing the notation. We want you on bass clarinet playing the whale part. And then we'll show people the whale is doing something like music. However, when I actually recorded it, given my natural tendencies not to play exactly the notes on the page, and if I'm playing with a whale, to interact with the whale rather than play the identical things, they said, no, you're bending it too much. You're interpreting it too much. Go straighter. And so literally I had to record this. This is the hardest part. Three times, straighter and straighter and more boring to really demonstrate this. And then the final version, literally someone the other day said, man, that whale sounds so much more like a bass clarinet than you.
I wanted to just ask you a little bit about being an artist and a scientist in the last year during COVID, and I know you tried some interesting experiments in outdoor performances and different things to overcome the pandemic stuff.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly strange and unique time. What do you do? It's been well remarked upon that performing artists are among the hardest hit by this crisis because they're just not allowed to do what they do. And I'm fortunate that I also have a job as a professor, so I can still teach. But you end up staring at the computer all day and talking to people and collaborating with people in different ways. I did 3 outdoor concerts in the fall in people's backyards with different groups, and that was quite fun, and I would do more. And now things are opening up more. There's going to be more events, but people are still scared of them. It's not like there's a rush to go and perform. But I did some unusual things, which is I collaborate a lot with people in different parts of the world, and we just made stuff together. And one thing I did is make this album we recorded online, like we're recording this, with Stephen Nachmanovich, who's a famous kind of thinker about improvisation, and he's a violinist, and he's written books on creativity. And I you know, knew his work for many years, so I hadn't met him in person, but we decided, let's do this together. And then as we did the music, we realized that, oh, it's, you know, music, big deal. You know, everyone's releasing music. It just comes out. You can't even buy or sell music. It just streams endlessly now. So let's do something else. Let's release a book to go with the music, like really long liner notes. We just talk about this improvised music. What were we doing? It's great. That's fun. And so then we recorded ourselves literally like 8-9 hours talking, and then automatically transcribed it. The computer transcription takes a few minutes, and then we edited it and turned it into this book, From This World, Another. And it's like 104-page discussions about music and life and improvisation and writing. And then we met for the first time last week. I went down there to Virginia, just drove down there. And he hadn't seen anybody in a year, like outside his family. So it was really fun. And then otherwise, I've done some live performances, like online. One singer is in Sweden, a guy is playing Maori instruments in New Zealand, and I'm here, and we mix it together, and things like that. And playing live with Nightingales in Berlin. I'm going to do that again in the coming weeks. And then we stream the Nightingales to me. I'm playing along with them. And things like that, learning what makes something live, what makes it produced, the online connection between people.
Years back, you did a project on cicadas, right?
Yeah, cicadas are coming out this year, but not quite in our area. They're coming out in New Jersey and Maryland, and I plan to go there and play music with them to try and do things differently than I did last time. And what if I thought, now we can use drones flying through the cicadas, film them differently. We can record 3D audio with sort of like virtual reality techniques. And what's fascinating is how much bigger this story is now than in 2013. It has something to do with the pandemic, people desperate for something that's not political, and something that talks about recurrence and the, you know, cycles. Like, oh, the cicadas are coming back again. The world has not ended. There's some cyclical aspect to life. Nature gets more exciting and alive and beautiful if you hear it as something musical that you can join in with. The sounds are just right there around, and you just have to pay attention to them. It doesn't have to be like distant whales and you know, rare bugs. Like tomorrow morning, I'm going to go out and play with the dawn chorus. Usually I don't get up that early, but I'm ready. And you don't have to get up at dawn. There's birds singing whenever it gets to these warm days after rain. And you start to hear all these sounds, how they all fit together. It gets surprisingly interesting.
David Rothenberg's translations of humpback whale songs can be found in National Geographic's May issue on newsstands and at nationalgeographic.com. His music and writings can be found on Bandcamp and at terranovamusic.net. For Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
Hello, folks. You're listening to the Mad Dog, Matt Wilson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
This is Carmen Borgia.
And John Sturman. We're the hosts of Ukuleles Unleashed,
where you'll hear...
And also...
Tiptoe through the tulips.
And also...
And some of this. There's always...
And remember this thing?
I'll grow when you...
Tune in the third Tuesday of each month from 8 to 10 p.m. for Ukuleles Unleashed
on WGXC 90.7 Acre.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Teo Campo-Real of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
The Senate-approved Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act has $15 billion allocated for the electric vehicle industry, and it's expected to add momentum to New York's growing commitment to renewables. The New York Climate Act outlines that the state must reach 100% zero-emission energy by 2040. Ann Reynolds with the Alliance for Clean Energy New York says with those ambitious climate goals, the state is also seeing healthy momentum in the solar energy movement.
And we hope that it continues because we still have a long way to go. And we still get the majority of our energy from fossil fuels. And if we want that to be more and more renewable, we have to get things built.
Reynolds notes more than 1,000 wind turbines have been installed across New York. And the state has signed over 90 contracts with wind and solar companies. She hopes the Infrastructure Act funds will be used to prioritize transit that helps to reduce airborne emissions, such as electric vehicles and high-speed rail. ACE New York is a 100-member organization that includes wind and solar power groups, electric vehicle charging companies, and others. Looking to the future, Reynolds hopes some of the equipment and supply chain for clean energy vehicles can be based in-state to boost the local economy.
My dream would be that ACE starts to get members that manufacture wind turbines or solar panels or electric buses in New York State. And we can help create not just the construction jobs that we're creating right now on the ground, but also some manufacturing jobs.
She says ACE New York expects to have about 20 clean energy projects under construction around the state this year. At the same time, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report published this week is warning once again that greenhouse gases are responsible for global warming and suggests lowering carbon emissions to limit the worst impacts. I'm Michaela Savitt for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Code Red, our human-caused climate emergency, demands immediate action. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan, and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Wildfires are incinerating forests in the American West, Turkey, Greece, and Siberia, destroying millions of acres, burning entire towns to the ground, blanketing vast regions under plumes of smoke stretching thousands of miles. The term megadrought is now used to describe droughts that last for decades, baking the landscape, leaving once brimming reservoirs dangerously low and threatening to leave whole cities without water. In Germany and China, torrential storms recently dumped a year's worth of rain in a matter of days, causing floods that swept hundreds of people to their deaths, displacing hundreds of thousands. Hurricanes and typhoons are occurring earlier with higher frequency and strength, devastating island nations and coastal communities.
You've been telling us for over three decades of the dangers of allowing the planet to warm. The world listened, but didn't hear. The world listened, but it did not act strongly enough. And as a result, climate change is a problem that is here now. Nobody's safe, and it's getting worse faster.
That's Inger Andersen, executive director of the United Nations Environment Program. The UN's Nobel Peace Prize-winning Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, says in its newly released sixth assessment report, its first major report on the science of climate change in 8 years, human influence on the climate system is now an established fact. It goes on, in 2019, atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations were higher than at any time in at least 2 million years, the report states. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called the report a code red for humanity. The 4,000-page document offers a detailed synthesis of over 14,000 scientific papers, painstakingly reviewed by 234 experts from 66 countries. They were assisted by over 500 contributing authors and received over 78,000 editorial comments prior to publication. The report includes the warning, quote, unless there are immediate, rapid, and large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, limiting warming to close to 1.5 degrees Celsius or even 2 degrees Celsius, that's 2.7 to 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, will be beyond reach, they say. Those two temperatures define what scientists, policymakers, world leaders, and climate activists have long identified as the narrow range, the lower and upper limits of global heating caused by humans that we as a species can allow to occur if we hope to maintain a livable planet. According to this new IPCC report, we have already heated the planet by about 1.2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. While that may sound small, it has already had planet-altering impacts.
We shouldn't be thinking about this as though there is a magic line at 1.5 degrees or at any level below which we're safe and above which we're not.
That's climate scientist Bob Kopp, one of the IPCC report's authors, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
Every bit of warming, whether it's above or below 1.5 degrees C, increases the risk that we face.
In 2015, almost every nation signed the Paris Agreement, the landmark climate treaty that affirmed each country's commitment to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. More than 5 years later, the rulebook for how the Paris Agreement will be implemented has yet to be agreed on. The United States, as the world's wealthiest nation and its historically greatest polluter, has a responsibility to act, not only to rapidly transition its own economy off of fossil fuels, but to help fund that transition globally. While campaigning for president, Joe Biden promised ambitious climate action, in stark contrast to his climate change-denying predecessor. After taking office, Biden immediately blocked the Keystone XL pipeline, but allowed the Dakota Access Pipeline to continue operating. He also refused to halt construction of the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline in Minnesota, where thousands have gathered this summer to join indigenous-led protests and where many have been violently arrested. Biden has also urged OPEC oil-producing nations to increase production to bring costs down. Nevertheless, President Biden has included elements of a Green New Deal in his Build Back Better agenda, setting new, higher standards for energy efficiency and clean energy, expanding incentives for clean electricity, electric vehicles, and clean energy manufacturing, and creating a civilian climate corps. Budget Committee Chair Senator Bernie Sanders has just submitted a $3.5 trillion budget framework to fund these initiatives and more. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer pledges to pass the bill by mid-September, using the Senate's reconciliation process to defeat an expected Republican filibuster. Meanwhile, the United Nations is moving ahead with its COP26 climate summit in Glasgow this November after canceling the meeting last year due to the pandemic.
The Glasgow summit, the COP26, is going to be perhaps the most significant COP that we've had.
That's climate scientist Salim Al-Haq speaking on Democracy Now!
We've been talking about it for a long time. We've not been getting anywhere with it. Now it's for the rich countries to recognize it's a reality and do what they're supposed to do, which is implement what they agreed to implement in Paris, keep the global temperature below 1.5 degrees and provide $100 billion a year to the developing countries to tackle climate change. They promised but didn't deliver.
The cost of shifting to a renewably powered, fossil fuel-free society will be enormous. But the costs of inaction are incalculably higher, not only in dollars, but in suffering, displacement, destruction, and death. Global mass movements for climate justice, many led by youth, are growing. Ultimately, this is the greatest hope for change during this crucial, narrowing window to save the planet. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts there is a 30% chance of showers before 1 p.m. on Saturday. And then it will be cloudy skies in the morning and then gradually becoming sunny with a high near 77. A low around 55 Saturday night, much cooler. Sunday also much cooler. Sunny with a high near 75 and a low around 54. And then Monday should be mostly sunny with a high near 78 and a low around 60. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. What do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. Well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money, and then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
Sitting here in limbo, but I know it won't be long. Sitting here in limbo, like a bird without a song. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my faith will lead me on. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the dice to roll. Sitting here in limbo, got some time to search my soul. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my faith will lead me on. I don't know where life will lead me, but I know where I've been. I can't say what life show me, but I know what I've seen. Tried my hand at love and friendship, but all that is past and gone. This little boy is moving on. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the tide to flow. Sitting here in limbo, knowing that I have to go. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my
Mr. Sprinkler, I'm heating high five and a day's no split. With a yawn, I trip comes the bodies following the one idea. It's clear, rattle to the roll, hold back up the track, grab your roller skates, y'all, and let's zip on by. Zippity doo, now let's zip on by. Feet on the weed and we're feeling high. Sun is on thick and the cheese is rolling thick. Come on, it's no time to hide. Season is twist, spinning and winning. No hack and sack, let me in. Spill on the bottom away, but it's okay. Ha, it's a Saturday.
Now let's all get baked like Anita.
Watch Mr. Lawn, don't look at the Peter.
Feel on the farm, I'll feel on the...
Hey, watch that.
It's a Saturday.
Now is the time to act the fool tonight. Forget about your worries and you will be alright. It's Saturday, 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 it's Saturday, Saturday, it's Saturday, Saturday, it's Saturday,
to me, and Joey said, that is one of the most brilliant sides I've ever seen.